Proceeding it now, page number 2. You find that we have repeated that mantra, Sahana Bhavatu, although we already chanted it once. The reason why that is done is because it is traditional to recite a Shanti Mantra before the study of Vedas. Upanishad being part of the Veda, it is traditional to also recite a Shanti Mantra, which is traditionally chanted for that Veda. So Kathopanishad is a part of Krishna Yajurveda, and the Shanti Mantra chanted for that is this Sahana Bhavatu, which we already chanted. But we will again recite it and discuss it for a few minutes and proceed further. Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahariyam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Very known to everybody, Om Sahanu Avatu. Saha means together, No means both of us, Avatu, may He protect. So that He is implied when we say Avatu, is the first person, means that may He. What is He here? He stands for Ishvara. Which Ishvara? Ishvara or Brahman, that is revealed as the subject matter of the Upanishad. So that Paramatma, that Lord, revealed by the Upanishad, may He Avatu, may He protect us both. So this is a dual, which means that both the teacher and the student, both of them are reciting this prayer, and both of them are seeking protection from Ishvara. This chanted by, not only in Brahma Vidya, even when you are reciting the Vedic chanting, then also this mantra would be chanted. And so both the teacher and the student are ideally. The teacher of Brahma Vidya does not require any protection, because what is to be achieved by protection is already achieved. But otherwise you can say that both of them are praying for the protection. Now understand that this mantra is chanted in the context of the knowledge, where the teacher is imparting the knowledge and the disciple is receiving the knowledge. So in that sense, what is meant by protection? So what kind of protection is being sought here? So Shankaracharya explains, Vidya Swarupa Prakashanena. May that Lord reveal the Swarupa, the nature of Vidya. So by revealing the knowledge, may he protect us. Basically, it's the disciple that needs protection. So by revealing the nature of knowledge, may he protect us. So naturally, that is the most exalted protection, by revealing nature of knowledge. Because what does the knowledge reveal? That you are. So that fearlessness, one of the things that is told is fearlessness is your nature. As the Upanishad, Ahayam Pratishtha Vindate, the one who gains the knowledge of oneself becomes free from all fear. So fear being also an expression of sorrow, becomes free from sorrow, becomes free from fear. Because fear can be there only when there is what we call duality. Dvitiyadve bhayam bhavati. When there is duality. You know what is duality? Duality means mutual exclusion. Two does not make duality. Mutual exclusion makes duality. There can be two persons and still may not feel excluded by each other. Suppose there is bondage of love between the two of them, then in spite of the personalities being two, there is still oneness that can be. But when that is not there, when you create in me a sense that you are different and I am different, or when that response arises from me that I am not you and you are not me, what it amounts to saying is that you exclude me and I exclude you. You are not what I am, and I am not what you are. That being excluded creates in me a sense of separatedness, a sense of isolation. It is not that just because I am one among many that I am isolated. No, when I feel separated from others, not part of them, not them, and whenever I identify with this body, mind, sense complex, and look upon you also as another body, mind, sense complex. Definitely the I, as characterized by this body, mind, sense complex, is different from that. So stronger the identification I have with my body, mind, sense complex, which is called ahankara or ego, stronger that identification is there, greater is the sense of separatedness or exclusiveness, and greater is the sense of insecurity. Stronger the ego is, smaller I feel about myself, and greater is the sense of insecurity. So what does this knowledge reveal? This knowledge reveals that in fact there is no exclusion, that in fact I do not exclude anything if I knew what the true nature of myself is. That I, as consciousness, which is my true nature, is all-inclusive. Nothing excluded from me, and I do not get excluded by anybody. When I see that, there is no reason for fear, because the dvaita or the mutual exclusion is not there. As I said, two does not make dvaita. It is mutual exclusion that is what makes dvaita. And that is the product of not knowing myself. Taking myself to be this body, taking you also as another body, and naturally two bodies are different, ever two selves also become different as though. Like one ornament thinks that I am a bangle, other one thinks that I am an earring, and then earring is not bangle, bangle is not earring from the standpoint of name and form. So as long as identification with name and form, certainly I am different from other name and form. Only when that bangle realizes I am gold, then when its understanding of the self changes, realizes that the hearing is not separate from me. No other ornament is separate from me. In that case, in spite of ornaments being many, in spite of manyness, there is no sense of separation, no sense of exclusion, and there is no isolation, and there is no insecurity, and there is no fear. Sahanu avatu, may the Lord protect us. Meaning protect from fear by revealing the true nature of self. When we realize that what is one or non-dual, that's I, then the very cause for fear disappears. Because fear was a product of ignorance, and knowledge removes that fear. Sahanu avatu, may protect us both. Sahanu bhunaktu, may nourish us both. Again, in context of the knowledge, what is nourishing? Vidya phala prakashanena. So, not by revealing to us the result of this knowledge, which of course is freedom. So, by knowledge and by revealing the result of the knowledge, which is freedom, may protect us, may nourish us both. Meaning that the real nourishment in life comes only as we keep knowing truly what we are, then the real nourishment comes. What is nourishment is basically that emotionally I feel more and more together as a person, more and more comfortable with myself. And by revealing the true nature of myself, I realize that I am what I want to be, and therefore, more clearly I know myself, more comfortable I feel with myself. And what is nourishment is feeling comfortable with myself. The greatest nourishment is I am totally comfortable with myself, totally satisfied with myself. Thus developing self-comfort is the nourishment, emotional nourishment. Physical nourishment is one thing, but emotional nourishment is feeling comfortable with myself. And the beauty is that as I discover comfort with myself, I automatically discover comfort with others. So thus, a comfort is created. So may we be nourished by discovering that comfort as a result of the knowledge. Tejasvino adhidamastu. So, may we both put forth sufficient effort. That is naturally that any pursuit requires effort. And therefore, pursuit of the knowledge also requires effort. What kind of an effort? Apart from the effort of our subjecting to this teaching, which is what we call Shravanam, of course that's an effort. But to benefit from Shravanam, benefit from listening to the teacher also requires an effort. Who can benefit most from the teaching? The one who is most prepared for the teaching. What is the preparation? That my mind is favorably disposed to and receiving and understanding what the teacher says. When teacher says you are limitless, my mind does not resolve. What do you mean I am limitless? Sometimes you have these complexes and we just cannot stand what we are told, even though what is being told is something good. But some, you know, there is Ishvara, there is an order of Ishvara. Who says there is an order? Because the person feels there is no order in my Ishvara is all grace. What do you mean Ishvara is all grace? Because my conclusion about Ishvara is different. So when I'm told, I may resist very often, I revolt. So in that sense, you know, so all I require is a mind that does not resist. As far as the pursuit of knowledge is concerned, all that we require is a mind that does not resist, which is comfortable with what is being told. That you are happiness, I'm happy to know that I'm happy. Sometimes we become more unhappy by knowing, oh, I'm supposed to be happy. So formally I was okay when I got angry at it, it don't matter. I thought that is the way. Now I realize that that's not right. So I feel even more unhappy. So there were these favorableness of the mind. This Upanishad also tells and Upanishad too tells. Dhatu prasadat mahimanamatmana. Prasada means favorableness. Dhatu huva ishvara or dhatu also means my mind and my personality should become favorable to me. So there are many prayers where we pray to Ishvara, to all the presiding deities, that apyayanta mamangani, may all my limbs may become favorable to the pursuit of this knowledge. Vadram karnevi shunyama deva. O devatas, O gods, please bless us that whatever we hear through our ears is auspicious. So thus, seeking the favor of Ishvara, so that this body, mind, sense complex becomes favorable to me, does not place obstacle to myself. My mind can be a great enemy of myself by always putting obstacles, by resisting, by getting distracted. And so, that mind's favor also I need, that it remains with me, doesn't get distracted, doesn't run away from me, and also it does not resist what it is learning. It is favorably disposed to hear and understand and assimilate what is being told. So in that sense, that effort is required to make our own mind favorable to us. That's a big effort. As Lord Krishna says, Atmaiva Hyatmano Banduhu, Atmaiva Ribhu Atmana. My mind can become my friend, my own, meaning a benefactor. Something that benefits me, or my own mind can become my enemy. Meaning something that puts obstacle to my path. Therefore, that effort is required, that my mind becomes favorable to this. And that is called the Antarakarana Shuddhi, purification of mind. More rajas, tamas impurities are there, more difficult the mind is. Less impurities are there. As the mind becomes purer, becomes more and more composed, tranquil, favorable. So maybe constantly make effort for cultivating samadhi shirka sampatti. Shama, dama, uparama, tidiksha. Shama means tranquility of the mind, making the mind free from these ragadveshas, attachment and aversions. Dhamma is self-control, freedom, all boundaries and no indulgence. Uparama, an inwardness, abiding in the self. Tidiksha, forbearance. The ability to be able to put up with discomforts, all these pricks and pains in the life. So these have to be cultivated. So that inner and outer obstacles to the mind are slowly removed, and that is the effort also that is required. So maybe make that effort which is required for gaining this knowledge. Apart, of course, from listening, and you may require effort in terms of learning Sanskrit, this, that, what not, what in case. So learning the language, learning the logic, reasoning. See, in the olden days, and traditionally, if you go to a traditional place like Kailas Ashram in Rishikesh, and you want to study Vedanta, first they'll send you where to the grammar class, Sanskrit. You know, study Sanskrit grammar. Then they'll teach you to send another class for studying Nyaya or Tarka or logic. Meaning some of those basic skills or discipline are required to study the scriptures. So that is also part of preparation. That as we grow into this and as we take more and more interest in learning, we require that, Swamiji, I think we need to learn Sanskrit. So that also, I think some little bit of logic or reasoning also is required. Some mimamsa, a bit of karmakanda may be required, just to be able to understand what the text and the commentaries tell us. Not right away, but if we find that these are required, then we make an effort to acquire those basic things. Not that you want to be a great grammarian or want to be a logician, etc. Just what you require. For what we require for cooking, that's all. You know, just few things. But so that you don't remain hungry. That I don't have to make any fancy stuff, but that you may at least make rice. I don't make chapatis. At least some toast I should have made. And some sabji. At least boil some, you know, cans and add some spices, etc. Something. So you go along with it. You don't have to become Sanskrit vyakarana or an expert in that. Some basic things are required. If you discover the need, then some effort in that direction also. Tejasyanu adhitamastu. May our study become effective. Study become effective. What effective in our study? Basically, study of Vedanta is meant to bring about our inner transformation. We should discover a constant transformation in ourselves, become better and better person, more and more kind person, more and more compassionate person. And then more and more clarity in understanding. So that is what is expected. That's what makes us happy. Ultimately, what we are seeking through any pursuit is happiness. And so the inner transformation, what are the obstacles of happiness? All these anger and lust and greed, etc., are all my obstacles. And therefore, slowly, I should conquer them. And then this teaching becomes so part of me. Walking the talk, as they say, slowly, not right away, but then that is called the effectiveness of the teaching. That what I study and what I learn, what I understand, gets reflected in my life, not for showing to others, but the way, the extent to which it gets reflected, it makes me a happier person. So may this teaching make us create the fruit in us, which is happiness. May the teaching become brilliant, it also means that may gain further and further clarity. Anena adhitena ahoratran sandadami. Even prayer says that, may I connect the day and night with this study, meaning that day and night may I study. So that, meaning that my mind becomes more and more available for this, becomes more and more free from other needs and distractions. Ma vidvishavahe says, may we not distance each other, may we not cavil at each other, may we not have any misunderstanding with each other, between the teacher and the student. Can there be misunderstanding? May we not hate each other. Well, you don't hate a teacher or student, but still the prayer is that, may we not cavil at each other, may we not have aversion for each other, may we not hate each other. You see, what happens is, those days, the student would go and live with the teacher. Not only for a day or two, for a number of years. And closer you are, more you come to learn about each other, and more, it's quite possible. And what happens is, that more and more you like your teacher, more and more comfortable you become. So more comfortable relationship becomes, then more free we become, more we feel protected, you know, then more liberty we start taking. Because I know I'm protected here, I'm safe, and therefore I can get away. And so I will pour out my mind, what's in my mind, I can easily pour out where I'm comfortable. With other people I'm always little, you know, I'm always reserved. And I say what is politically right, etc., etc. Because I know I don't want to, you know, disturb any feathers, whatever they call it. But once I know you, and once I know that I am accepted by you, and then you are going to accept me regardless of what I am, then slowly my true things come out. This happens in all intimate relations. That's how all problems also come out. Of transference, this, that, whatnot. But anyway, so even between teacher and students also it can happen. And there are other students also may be there, and then slowly, one, then you start become more and more, you need, once attention is paid to you, you need more attention, and then more attention, and then look at who is getting more attention, and then some envy starts, some jealousies, these things go on, these are all, the inner dynamics are there, in a Gurukulam also. And if your conclusion is that the teacher is, you know, sometimes you feel that you are being targeted, you know, because he's telling me, Swami, the whole class was for me, then I get scared. So I felt that today the whole class was meant for me. Then I wait, what does it mean? Since he's happy, then it's okay. Otherwise, main goal, I was targeted. Sometimes people feel. All of these are results of closeness, understand, you know. So closeness also has its own difficulties if we do not have proper boundaries. And so that way expectations grow, and the time comes when the other person may not be able to fulfill my expectations, and then I get angry. The teacher also may have expectation from the student, you know, as to what the person should do and should not do. And therefore, more expectations are there, more dissatisfaction is likely to be, and the same relationship can just turn around, which started so well can turn around if you don't pay attention. So may this not happen. May my emotions not take over me when I am talking to the students. If I had some problem with the student, then you know, my own emotion may take, and then it's possible that I may target somebody, or I may want to, what I cannot tell you out otherwise, you know, I tell you in the class. So at personal level, I don't say that, you know, because I don't appear to be a harsh person. But in the class, I can take advantage. So very often, the people, you know, when they're addressing the audience, they use that as an occasion to give their peace of their mind, etc., etc. So all these things can happen. I mean, therefore it is said, may this not happen. May the teacher not misunderstand or may not, you know, cavil the student, may the student also may not. And let there be harmony between the two. Because most important in this is the relationship between the teacher and the student, that the student has shraddha, the trust in the teacher, bhakti, devotion or reverence for the teacher. That is required on the part of the student, which gives the student a disposition of mind which is now ready to receive without resistance. So, while I am listening to the teacher, my mind is not a questioning mind, not a resisting mind, a receiving mind. Swami used to give example of sponge. Swami, those are like sponge, as he used to tell us, you know. Talking about the students in United States, like sponge, they absorb, you know. So good, I was happy to hear that. But anyway, the thing is that that's what we want, that we absorb what is told to us. But then sponge does not resist, you know, it receives, absorbs. So may I possess a mind like that. But that requires a shraddha, bhakti also. And ekagrata or concentration. So may I possess those qualities of mind that gives me right disposition to receive this teaching. And teacher also should have the right disposition. He should be a kind person. He should be a compassionate person. He must have patience also. Sometimes you know what is, you don't still understand how many times I will tell you. So you can get impatient also. And so then you need patience. So teacher needs patience, kindness, concern for this. That he has no his agenda at all. This agenda of the teacher is only agenda of the student. The teacher doesn't have an agenda. It's very important. Otherwise, this very communication can be also exploited for fulfilling one's agenda. So ideally, teacher should have no agenda other than simply sharing his knowledge. And hopefully doing the best that he can, he or she can do for the student. And the student has no agenda other than studying and gaining the knowledge. If that atmosphere exists, then nothing else will come in the way. If there are other agendas, then those agendas come in the way, because when the agendas are not fulfilled, then they can create these disturbances. So may we be free from all other agendas. Mahavidvishavahe, let them, you know, not any distance from each other. Some aversion may not be created. Let there be an atmosphere of shraddha and bhakti on the part of the student and care and concern on the part of the teacher. So that's the kind of frame of mind we require. It's called shanti patha. When this is there, the mind enjoys peace. Particular peace there is no, because my own being becomes favorable, therefore there is no disturbance from within, no disturbance from without, no disturbance from the supposedly divine sources. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Again, before we go to the text, there is one more prayer here that we have reproduced from the Bhashya of Shankaracharya. So let us read that also. Om Namo Bhagavate
Vaivasvataya
Mrityave Brahma Vidyacharyaya Nachiketase cha. Usually we do not see Bhashyakara beginning with this kind of prayer. One place where we have seen Vashyakara saluting the teachers is in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Namo Brahmadibhyo Brahma Vidya Sampradaya Kartrubhyo. So he salutes the teachers, the parampara of the teachers, succession of the teachers. Here also, interesting enough, Vashyakara, there is like a prayer that Vashyakara performs. It is traditional to start any endeavor with a prayer. Prayer is to seek the grace of Ishvara, to remove the obstacles on our path. Purpose of prayer is the freedom from obstacles on our path, so that whatever task we have commenced, it can be finished without obstacles. Similarly, Bhashyakara also has commenced the task of writing a commentary on this Upanishad. And he also warned that no obstacle should come. Oh, Swami Shankaracharya also feels that way. Maybe he doesn't feel that way. But sometimes these great people do things not necessarily because they require for themselves, but because they want to set an example. Then the subsequent generation also should do this. That every endeavor should begin with a prayer. So even though prayer may not necessarily be the need of Adi Shankaracharya, let us say, but he still does it to set an example for others. That you need a prayer before you commence anything, because if by prayer you are invoking the grace of Ishvara. Ishvara can be in form of Guru, Ishvara can be in form of Creator, can be from a devata. Sometimes they pray to Lord Ganesha, Goddess Saraswati, etc. So, in one way or the other, seeking grace, invoking grace. Recognizing that I need help. Recognizing that I have limitations. And therefore, I may not be capable enough of warding off all the obstacles. And therefore, I need help. So, seeking help. As the Swami used to say, seeking help is intelligent living. Where you need help, seek help. Meaning if you need help, then seek help. Don't deny. Let there be denial that I need help. Everybody can need help and never seek help. So then everybody who commences any endeavor requires that I need help, because there can be obstacles. In Sanskrit it says, Shreyamsi Bahu Vignani. Particularly when you start an auspicious thing, there is likelihood of many obstacles, for whatever reason. In Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, he said that the devatas do not like that these human beings pursue this knowledge. You know? A way of saying, devatas do not like that you pursue the knowledge of Brahman. You know why? Because what does this knowledge teach you? That I am Brahman, I am limitless. What does it say? I am not a doer, I am actionless. So it reveals the true nature of self, which is actionless, which is so. Once I discover that I am actionless, I have nothing to do now, then I stop doing things. So formerly I was performing variety of rituals because I thought I needed things. As a result of this knowledge, I realize I don't need anything. So I stop doing things. What is meant by stop doing things is stop performing rituals, stop performing pleasing those devatas. So formally for pleasing the devatas, because they fulfill my needs. So when I thought I was needy, I needed their favor, and therefore I propitiated these devatas by way of this rituals, when I made offering to the devatas, and so devatas got their share. So human beings sustain the devatas, understand, by making offerings. If I stop offering, that is that one, that much less tax collection, you know. They don't like it. Therefore, they're watching out. If somebody is going to slide into the Brahma Vidya, then they put some obstacles. This is a way of saying. So, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad says that the devatas do not like that this person is pursuing Brahma Vidya. Because he will be no more in our fold now. And then he will no more give us any offerings. And we will be deprived of those offerings. And so, they will put obstacles so that somehow you are discouraged, something. So it is said. Then Shankaracharya says, what's the purpose of saying it? It says that in this pursuit, you need the favor of devatas, need the grace of devatas. So always pray to them. But the point is, obstacles can come. And there were need for prayer. So there was this called Mangala Acharanam. Acharanam means conduct. Mangala means auspicious. An auspicious beginning. So remembering God or devatas, prayer is an auspicious thing. So what we just read is the prayer that Bhashyakara or Adi Shankaracharya makes. He offers salutation. Om Namo Bhagavate Vaivasvataya Vrityave Brahma Vidyacharyaya Nachiketasecha. Om Namah, my salutation. To whom? Vaivasvataya. Vaivasvata means son of Vivasvan. Vivasvan means son, S-U-N son. So the Puranas describe how son has number of progeny. One of them is this Yamaraja, or lord of death. So Vaivasvata, son of Vivasvan, son of son. Who is Yamaraja? Who is the presiding deity of death? So Yamaraja means lord of death. So as you say in Kathopanishad, who is the teacher? Death is the teacher. That is the uniqueness of this Upanishad also. Because death is a very important thing in life. And death knows what is before death and what is after death. Because he is the one who pulls your life away and then disposes you of wherever according to your karma. So he knows life as well as death. And therefore, so one who knows all of this is also called Bhagavan. And Bhagavan means one who possesses sixfold Aishwarya. But then, this also, Utpattim cha vinasam cha bhutanam agatim gatim vetti vidyam cha savacho bhagavaniti. One definition of the word Bhagavan is one knows the Utpattim cha, one knows where the beings are coming and where they are going, and what is the birth and what is the death, one knows. Bhutanam agatim gatim, where the beings have come and what their destiny is going to be. Vetti vidyam vidyam cha, who knows knowledge as well as ignorance. Meaning, what ignorance does, samsara also he knows, and knowledge also he knows. So, he knows this is called Bhagavan. Om Namo Bhagavate, to such a Bhagavan, my namaskar. Who is the Bhagavan? Vaivasvataya. Vivasvan, which is the son of son. Not an ordinary person. Son means what? The embodiment of light. He stands for, in fact, Hiranyagarbha, or the very creator. So this sun symbolizes what we call Hiranyagarbha. He symbolizes the creator of the universe, who possesses all the knowledge. So all the powers are, so we have with us the power to know, the power to will, and power to act. Jnana Shakti, power to know. Ichha Shakti, power to will. Kriya Shakti, power to act. Each one of us possesses this power in little measure. One possesses these powers in totality. is Bhagavan, Hiranyagarbha, or Vivaswam, or the son, and his son, not ordinary person. So the teacher of Kathopanishad is Vaivasvata, is Yamaraja, is Lord of Death, who is none other than the son of the all-knowing, all-powerful Ishu Bhagavan. So that means that he also inherits those qualities. That's the idea here. So sometimes you are glorified by your family name, you know. So Bush, by the name. I mean, good, bad, or indifferent. The point is, you know, the name goes. And that's how you get things done. Or that's how you are regarded. Oh, he comes from this family, that family. Because some families are well known, either for their wealth or for nobility or for their charity or for their knowledge or for their scholarship. Some people are known. So when they, oh, you are son of so and so. My grandfather was such and such. My father was such and such. You know, Swami, my father wrote this book and that book and my grandfather. Oh, then he also carries something from the from his ancestors. And so who is Vivaswa? Who is it? Vivaswata, teacher of Kathopanishad, is none other than the son of Surya. So that way, glorifying him by referring to him through his father. Sometimes you refer to a person through the son. Swami, here nobody, even everybody knows me as father. When you go to children's program and things like that, children are sometimes more well known than the parents, naturally. So here they may know me as so this fellow's father. They don't know me. So sometimes you are glorified by your son, sometimes you are glorified by your father, glorified by your family, you know, tradition, etc. So Vivaswata, glorifying the teacher as the progeny of Vivaswan, the son. Mrutyave, he is Mrutyu, embodiment of death. So question is, how can death be the teacher? Death must be very cruel, is not so? Yamaraja, the lord of death, what is his job, you know? Is to pull out the life. And that requires a lot of cruelty. Because once he is, number one, there is no favorableness, no in Yamaraja, in his court, there is no such thing as favorableness. He is Dharmaraja, meaning that he just follows the laws to the letter. Never, when the karma is over, that's gone, whoever it is. So he just pulls out the life. That's his job. Very cruel. You just say the teacher must be kind and compassionate and caring. How can this cruel entity be the teacher of Brahma Vidya? And so explanation is given how Yamaraja, the lord of death, he is the teacher of Brahma Vidya, meaning that he abides in knowledge of Brahman. Because ideally the teacher is the one who walks the talk. So if he says that you are Brahma, I am Brahman, then that's what he is, ideally. And that's the kind of teacher that Yamaraja is. Meaning that he abides in knowledge of Brahman. That I am actionless. Neva kinchit karomili, I don't know anything. Even though appearing to do something, the wise person does not do anything, as Lord Krishna described. Similarly also, Yamaraja is abiding in the wisdom. He knows his true nature, actionless self. And therefore, even though he appears to be, in fact, killing people or snatching away their life, in fact, he does not do anything. Meaning, he doesn't have to worship. So it is not simply what you do. It is what goes behind what you do which determines the effect. Outwardly, he seems to be performing cruel action. But in his mind, there is no doership at all. There is no identification that I am doing something. And therefore, he retains his purity. Meaning that he retains his qualification of being a teacher of Brahma Vidya because he doesn't kill. There is no cruelty. He doesn't kill. Well, he is killing everybody. No, he doesn't. Outwardly looks to, but who is killing? He doesn't have a sense of doership. So even though he is Mrityu, he can still be a teacher of Brahma Vidya and still deserves our reverence and salutation. ಹೀ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ವಿದ್ಯಾ ಆಚಾರ್ಯ ಇದೆ. ಆಚಾರ್ಯ ಆಫ್ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ವಿದ್ಯಾ, ಆಚಾರ್ಯ ಮೀನ್ಸ್ ದಿ ಟೀಚರ್. ಆಚಾರ್ಯ ಇಸ್ ಅ ವರ್ಡ್ ವಿಚ್ ಅವರ್ ಯು ರಿಮೆಂಬರ್ ವಿಜಯ್ ಕಪೂರ್ ಟಾಕ್ಡ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ ಆಚಾರ್ಯ. ಆಚನೋದಿ ಶಾಸ್ತ್ರಾರ್ಥಂ ಆಚಾರ್ಯ ಸ್ಥಾಪಯತ್ಯಪಿ ಸ್ವಯಂ ಆಚಾರ್ಯ ಸ್ಮಾತ್ ಆಚಾರ್ಯ ಇದು ಕೀರ್ತ್ಯತೆ. ಎ ಪರ್ಸನ್ ಆಚಾರ್ಯ. ಸೊ ದಿಸ್ ಆಚಾರ್ಯ ಇಸ್ ಎಕ್ಸ್ಪ್ಲೈನ್ಡ್ ಆಸ್ ಡಿರೈವ್ಡ್ ಇನ್ ಡಿಫರೆಂಟ್ ವೇಸ್. ಒನ್ ವೇ ಟು ಎಕ್ಸ್ಪ್ಲೈನ್ ಆಚಾರ್ಯ ಇಸ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ಆ ಪ್ಲಸ್ ರೂಟ್ ಚಿ ಬಿಕಮ್ಸ್ ಆಚಾರ್ಯ. ಚಿ ಮೀನ್ಸ್ ಟು ಪ್ಲಕ್ ಕಲೆಕ್ಟ್. ಆಚನೋತಿ ಶಾಸ್ತ್ರಾರ್ಥಂ ಒನ್ ಕಲೆಕ್ಟ್ಸ್ ದಿ ಶಾಸ್ತ್ರಾರ್ಥ ದಿ ಟ್ರೂತ್ ಆಫ್ ದಿ ಶಾಸ್ತ್ರ ಫ್ರಮ್ ಮೆನಿ ಪ್ಲೇಸಸ್ ಲೈಕ್ ಎ ಹನಿ ಬೀ, ಯು ನೋ. ಸಿಮಿಲರ್ಲಿ ಇಸ್ ಒನ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ಆಲ್ ದಿ ಶಾಸ್ತ್ರ ದಿ ಕಲೆಕ್ಟ್ಸ್ ದಿ ಅರ್ಥ ದಿ ಎಸೆನ್ಸ್. ಸೊ ಆಚಾರ್ಯ ಇಸ್ ಒನ್ ಹೂ ಹ್ಯಾಸ್ ದಿ ಇನ್ ಡೆಪ್ತ್ ನಾಲೆಜ್ ಆಫ್ ದಿ ಸ್ಕ್ರಿಪ್ಚರ್ಸ್. ಆಚಾರ್ಯ ಸ್ಥಾಪಯತ್ಯಪಿ ಸ್ವಯಂ ಆಚರದೆ ಯಸ್ಮಾತ್ ಅಂಡ್ ದ ಒನ್ ಹೂ ಪುಟ್ಸ್ ಇನ್ ಟು ಪ್ರಾಕ್ಟೀಸ್ ವಾಟ್ ಇಟ್ ಈಸ್ ದಟ್ ಹಿ ನೋಸ್ ಆರ್ ವಾಟ್ ಇಟ್ ಈಸ್ ದಟ್ ಹಿ ಟೀಚಸ್. ಐಡಿಯಲಿ ಆಚಾರ್ಯ ಇಸ್ ಒನ್ ಹೂ ವಾಕ್ಸ್ ದ ಟಾಕ್. But that is also not enough. There are many Mahatmas like that, but they don't become Acharya. Acharya sthapayatyati. One who also makes other person do that. Meaning that the teacher makes a disciple do what is required to be done. He is not indifferent in that sense that, okay, if you learn, that's all right. Do not learn. No, that's not so. Particularly the teachers of those brahmacharis who go for studying Vedas are very strict. We have not seen that kind of teacher, that's why we don't know. But traditionally teachers could be pretty strict. You know about Bada Swami, Swami Chinmayanandji, his teacher was Swami Tapovan Maharaj. The next, when you go next day, first thing you are required is to repeat what you studied yesterday. No? Go home. First thing, he's watching. Chinmaya, what were you doing that time? Man, Chinmaya, that's Swamiji. Also, is, you know, before that, so you can imagine that kind of teacher. I always like to think of him because otherwise, Swami Chinmayanandji was like that, a lion. And everybody was in his presence. But you can, it's nice to imagine somebody whose presence he also. You get that vicarious satisfaction. All that. We are not the only people. But very strict. That's what they believed. They believed that it is their job to mold the student. Not like our Swami. No, no, they will learn. They will grow. They will become mature. God bless them. You know, all that. So some people, other people believe that we have to do that. And therefore, they make sure that you do what is right thing to do and avoid what is not right to do. So there are rules and disciplines and things like that. Acharya sthapayatyapi. One who establishes the students in Vachara, right conduct also, who himself follows the conduct and also makes other conduct themselves in that way. So that's called Acharya. So Brahma Vidya Acharya. Acharya Brahma Vidya. Who? This Lord Death. My salutation to the teacher. And one interesting thing is the last Nachiketa Seja. So Nachiketa is a disciple here. Yavaraja is a student and Nachiketa is a disciple. Kathopanishad is a dialogue between Yavaraja and Nachiketa. Who is Yavaraja? Lord of Death. Nachiketa, the disciple. A young boy. Imagine Shankaracharya saluting him. How great he must have been. So we'll see the greatness of this young boy. Who is, I guess, was not yet entered his puberty, you know. So, that was his age. They don't say, oh, Kumar. So, in Ayurveda, all these One is called Shishu, and also Kumar, and one is called Yuva, etc., etc. But anyway, but I imagine he may be like 12, 16 years old, 16 also, you know, but so he deserves the salutation from Shankaracharya. He also salutes a disciple. That's a unique thing. They always salute a teacher, you always salute. But here, even the disciple also is saluted. It's because of him that this knowledge came to us. If he did not know what he did, we would not be the recipient of this knowledge. Thus, it begins with the Mangalacharan prayer in the form of salutation to the teacher and the disciple. Now the story begins. So first we are told the story. That's the question. Why do you start with this guy? This is a Brahma Vidya. What are you telling about this to be father and son? What? He says, well, that's to build up the context. The people have no patience. They say, come on, start with this. Start the main topic. He says, wait a minute. You have to build up to the main topic. By creating a right disposition of mind in us, so that then we are ready. When it begins, then we are ready to understand what is being told. Therefore, this Upanishad in particular describes the story a little more elaborately. Elsewhere also the anecdotes are there, but sometimes told very briefly. Maybe in a few sentences. Here a whole chapter is devoted to telling us the anecdote of the story of how it happened that Yamaraja imparted this knowledge to Nachiketa. So the story begins. We have reproduced here the very first of the Upanishads. So let us read that. An Om should have been there, but anyway, sometimes it is written, sometimes not written. Om Ushan. Ushan Havai Vajashravasah Sarvavedasam Dadau Tasyaha Nachiketa Nama Putra Asa. Vajashravasah. This name of the Rishi, Vajashravasaha, explains how did he get that name, Vajashravasaha. So, Vajashravasaha is the son of Vajashravas, or Vajashrava. The son of Vajashravas is called Vajashravasa. One is half sa, other is full sa, that's the difference. So, Vajashravasaha is a person. He is a son of his father who was called Vajashrava. So, how come his name is Vajashravasa? Shravas means fame and Vaja means annam. So, one who was very famous because of food, because of feeding. So, one who was very famous because of distribution of food. Because of feeding the people. In the Vedic times, this feeding had a great value. At all times maybe, but particularly in the times of Vedas, offering food to the needy was considered a very important thing and a very essential duty of a householder. That from the house of the householder, a person should not go back hungry. If somebody comes to your home seeking food or even shelter, overnight shelter, because if there are travelers, those days maybe there were no inns and there were no motels and stuff like that. So a householder or home was an inn. Meaning that those travelers could come to your home hoping and expecting that you'll be able to feed them and give them shelter. And so it was considered duty of a householder to provide shelter and food to those who are needy. The Itri Upanishad clearly says, that when somebody comes to you seeking shelter or food, you should not be turned away. Na kanchana vasato pratyachakshita tadvratam. This is a vow of a householder, that vasati means for shelter. When somebody comes, na pratyachakshita, he should not be turned away. And when somebody lives with you, even for an overnight, for a day, naturally you take care, so you have to feed the person also. For feeding the person, you require food in your home. Oh, sorry, we have run out of this. Oh, there's no rice. There's no, that doesn't work with a householder. Meaning that you must have sufficient storage of food or the grains, so that you never run out of them. And you are always able to feed who come to you. So there is tasmad ya kaya chivadaya bhakvannam prapna. Therefore, a householder should therefore store food or annam, grains, by a hook or crook. Then we are allowed. Yaya kaya, by hook or crook, make sure that you have sufficient storage to feed others. So this was something considered very important those days. And this person was very famous for feeding others. That's why he got the name Vajashravas. So there is a person whose name is Vajashravasa. What did he do once upon a time? See, Ushan Ha. You see that first one is Ushan, second one is Ha. Ha is in the sense of what they call the Ha stands for history, telling you, you know, what happened once upon a time. History is called Itihasa in Sanskrit, you know. Iti Ha Asa. Itihasa means history. How is that word made? Iti Ha Asa. Iti in this manner. Asa it was. Ha, once upon a time. So that Ha so says, once upon a time. Once upon a time, Vajashravasa. A person or a sage whose name was Vajashravasa. Sarvedasam dadau. Dadau he gave away. Sarvedasam, all his wealth. Once upon a time, Vajashravasa gave away all his wealth. Means that he performed a particular kind of ritual called Vishvajit ritual or Vishvajit yaga, which requires you to give away all your wealth. I guess in those days, when a person wants to retire, give away everything. So perform a ritual which requires you to give everything away in the gift. So that kind of ritual, this Vajashravasa performed once upon a time. But he performed ritual with an agenda. So Ushan means desiring heaven. This ritual was not done for as just merely as a matter of offering, but it was done with an agenda that as a result of performing a ritual, I will reach heaven. What is heaven? Where there is all pleasure and no pain. This was the imagination, this was the idea or concept of heaven, which offers you unsullied happiness. That's, so people on earth know that there is no such, you know, these people get fed up with the life here anyway, one way or the other. And so they imagine a realm which is free from all conflict and all sorrow and all unhappiness. That's what heaven. The heaven was therefore the goal of life. And the rituals were prescribed to achieve that goal. And Vajashravasa was performing a ritual like that called Vishvajit, which required him to give away all the wealth in gift in order that he will reach heaven. Isn't it? All right, then what happens then? Tasya, again the Ha means that, says that this is an anecdote. So an anecdote is being described. Nachiketa naam putrasa. Tasya abhis Vajashravasa. Putrasa had a son whose name was Nachiketa. Sanskrit word is Nachiketas. The word is Nachiketas. What will be the nominative singular of Nachiketas? You don't have to answer it, but there are some Sanskrit scholars here, so, you know. Nachiketa. Say that again. Nachiketaha, not taha. Chandramas chandramaha. Nachiketas nachiketaha. But is it Nachiketana putraha? What happened to that visarga? Nachiketaha is the nominative singular. So in Sanskrit language, no word can be used unless it is properly declined. Then only it can becomes, you know, and therefore, so that pada, a pratipadika, an original word must be declined properly, then only it can be used in the sentence. So, subject is always placed in the nominative case. So, Nachiketa is the nominative case. So, subject is Nachiketa. But the nominative singular, Nachiketaha. So, but it says Nachiketa is a printing mistake or something? Nachiketa asa. Nachiketa nama putra asa. What happens to the visarga? Alright. So now we won't worry about this Sanskrit business, you know. Anyhow, right? No, there are always some who are studying Sanskrit and they are always enthusiastically replying. So that, but apparently people are not very enthusiastic. No, there are circumstances where that visarga gets elided. Meaning it is there, but it is not written. When, so this poor visarga, just by the way, doesn't have any freedom at all. How it looks like is determined by what follows, what precedes. How it is pronounced is determined by what follows. And whether it is written or not also, and what happens to it also is determined by what follows. Sometimes it goes away. In this case, when it is followed by the soft consonant or a vowel, then it is delighted. Sometimes the poor fellow becomes O instead of Visarga, and therefore, so Visarga hardly remains Visarga. In most cases, that Visarga, you know, the two dots, it's called Visarga. In most cases, it doesn't remain Visarga. Either it goes away, it becomes something else. Only when it is followed by a sibilant, and you know, then only it remains Visarga. Otherwise, it doesn't remain. So all along it is Nachiketa, Nachiketa. In fact, the word is Nachiketa ha for information. Meaning the word nay, the nominative singular form is Nachiketa ha. But very rarely we will see that. Only when that word will be followed by sibilant, then only that visarga will remain. Otherwise visarga goes away. So he is called Nachiketa. Usually name is called Nachiketa. There is no such thing as Nachiketa. Either the only pratipadika, the original word Nachiketas. So some people who are Puritans, they write always Nachiketas. So what do you write in English? Should you write in English the declined word, or should you write in English the original word? Atma, we say always. Atma is not the, what's the original word, pratipadika? Atman. What is Atma? The nominative singular. Always written Atma. Brahmachari, again declined. Sannyasi, declined. But sometimes they write Brahman also, they write, you know. They don't write Brahma. Declined form Brahman will be Brahma. But they write, so there is no consistency as to what we write in English. Sometimes they write the Pratipadika. There is undeclined original word or pada, or sometimes we decline, right, the declined formation. So usually call him Nachiketa. Teacher is Yamaraja, disciple is Nachiketa. Ideally we should Nachiketas, we should say. We don't say Nachiketa. So Nachiketa is a disciple, and this is the setting now. The big story begins. Once upon a time, there was a sage whose name was Vajasharasa. He commenced a performance of a ritual called Vishwajit, in which he was required to give away all his wealth. And of this Vajasharvasa, he had a son. His name was Nachiketa. Then what happens? That story further describes. We'll continue. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate
शिष्यते। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। शङ्करं शङ्कराचार्यं केशवं बादरायणं सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः। ईश्वरो गुरुरात्मेति मूर्तिभेदविभागिने व्योमवद्व्याप्तदेहाय दक्षिणामूर्तये नमः। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। हरि ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरि ॐ।
So now, if you see your schedule.